Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm going to get into my slides and hopefully I can do this properly. All right. So the power of LDN. I gave a similar talk on low-dose naltrexone about a year ago, and it was interesting because usually I talk about a multitude of different either prescription medications, compounds, or supplements is my other passion. But with today's talk, we're just going to spend time on one drug that we compound here. And as Monica already mentioned, I probably see about 20 to 30 patients every day that are either picking up refills for the naltrexone that we compound, or even brand new patients too. So I do see firsthand every single day, again, what this simple drug is doing for so many patients. So with that, let's get into my slides here, and we'll just kind of go through it step by step. So yeah, the power of LDN, one drug for chronic illness that you don't need to fear. I know often as that pharmacist, and I did work retail pharmacy for a number of years, is you'd sit down with a patient and, you know, have to give them a litany of side effects that they have to be worried about. Fortunately, with low-dose naltrexone, we don't have that issue, so we'll get to that in just a few moments. Let's see if I can advance my slides. There we go. So I am not a medical doctor, just to be aware of that. So just the information that I'm presenting today, you know, don't take that as medical advice and say, well, Dan told me to do this or do that. I certainly recommend you going back to your physician to, you know, getting that treatment information. So just be aware of that. Before we jump in, some questions that I always get, is low-dose naltrexone for everyone? The answer is no. We'll get to this too in a few minutes, but I want to make everyone aware that even as great of a drug that this is or can be, there are some exceptions here that some patients, it's just not the right choice. So we'll talk about that again momentarily. The other question I get is, I get this almost every week now. My healthcare provider said that naltrexone is, you know, for heroin or alcohol addicts, and that's certainly false. When it was approved initially by the FDA, it was used to treat heroin addicts, and then a decade later for alcoholism, but it did fall off a favor. And so when you see naltrexone or Google search that, you might come across this information that naltrexone is only used for those issues, and it's certainly not. So, do I need a prescription for LDN from my doctor? Yeah, so I've had patients that have come into our store that just said, my so-and-so sent me down here to get low-dose naltrexone, and unfortunately, I have to tell them, you know, we need to get a hold of your doctor and get a prescription for it. So in the U.S., this is a prescription-only item. And then one other question I always get is, you know, my LDN wasn't working for me after 4 weeks or 6 weeks, maybe even 2 months. And so I'm going to bail on it and start a different therapy. And the answer to that is maybe. It might be too soon to tell. I've got a patient case towards the end of my slides that we'll get to that'll kind of shed some light on time to benefit. Just to go over a little bit of history and pharmacology, I don't know what Dr. Muth or Dr. Zielsdorf is going to be presenting, but as the pharmacist here on the panel, I certainly want to go through some of the pharmacology and history. Let me just get this information pulled up here. Sorry for the prompts, but so German pharmacist Friedrich Sertner, in 1806 rather, isolated morphine from opium. Then it was some 40 years later that the actual chemical formula, which I have off to the side there, not that we're going to be doing a quiz on that later, but the pharmacist in me likes to always see the chemical structures, finally figured out the formula for what morphine was like. In 1874, then Charles Wright first synthesized diacetylmorphine. So we know that better by the name of heroin. And then some time passed where we're trying to figure out exactly how this opioid receptor worked. And there was a lot of different chemical or pharmaceutical synthesis of new drug compounds that started to take place in the 30s and 40s. Finally, in 1966, the U.S. made the discovery of the first morphine blocking drug, and we'll talk about what that means in a few moments too, named naloxone. And a year later from that is where we came up with naltrexone, which we'll be talking about today in quite detail. And I got one more bullet point there. So and a year later is when we came across naltrexone. And again, I'll talk more about what an opioid antagonist means in an upcoming slide here. And I've got a picture of some poppy plants off there to the side as well. I'm not going to have a quiz on this later, but again, this is just how my brain works. I always like to look at, think of lock and key analogies and receptors and so forth. The whole receptor concept is relatively new, all things considered. So looking at this chemical structure of morphine and naloxone and naltrexone, you can certainly see some similarities there, but they have profoundly different effects in the human body. So opiate medications certainly have similar effects, but different structures. I just showed on the previous slide. And they also mimic natural neuropeptides. And we'll, again, get into that, what that means. I think of neuropeptides as endorphins, or again, just another product that the body makes that's synthesized and released into action to perform a multitude of different functions in the body. These neuropeptides exert pain-relieving effects. They help with mood and improving mood. I always think of neuropeptides or endorphins as getting that runner's high. Part of that is endorphin-related. And then the peripheral nervous system acts as, I always think of things as, things in our house. So the peripheral nervous system acts as this wiring system. And opiates bind to these nerve terminals and prevents this release of something called substance P. Substance P, the end result is if we can block that, this pain signal is no longer transmitted. And so we have to kind of think of this cascade of what's going on in the body and the biochemistry that's going on. I want patients to understand that we're working within a system where our body's producing again, these neuropeptides, these proteins are important for how LDN is going to interface in this entire system. So opioid receptors are found all over the body, but mainly in the central nervous system. They're involved, again, in a multitude of different neurochemical reactions. The opioid receptor in the brain acts to inhibit pain and modifies the release of dopamine. So we all typically are familiar with dopamine as that happy, good feel neurotransmitter. It does aid in certain other things as well, just ambition, striving, helps with focus, finding things interesting and that sort of thing. That's why I call it that happy, good feeling neurotransmitter. Dopamine is released primarily under the control of GABA. At the pharmacy here, I typically use GABA as that calming neurotransmitter. I think of GABA on a teeter-totter with actually glutamate. GABA is I always think of it as the brake system of the brain, essentially. But in this case, when we're looking at dopamine, again, I think of that pleasure center, it's controlled by GABA. So GABA release has an inhibitory effect on dopamine. So essentially what happens is GABA release is lessened, is inhibited by opiates, causing an increased release of dopamine in the synapse. So we have to understand that When we're talking about naltrexone, there's a multitude of different players involved, and we want to make sure that all of those different neurotransmitters are certainly balanced and working properly as well to maximize the benefit of naltrexone. So we want to keep all of that in mind. So these opioid receptors I keep talking about. So there's four main types of them in the body. There's mu, delta, kappa, and there's an outer membrane, the opioid growth factor receptor. The mu receptor's main function is an analgesic, so pain control, respiration, GI motility, inflammation. We'll talk more about inflammation in a few slides here. There's the delta receptor, again, helps in pain control and inflammation. The kappa receptor also in part helps with pain control, analgesic effects, diuresis, and also inflammation. And then this nuclear receptor called the OGF receptor is important in growth and healing. We'll talk about that when we get into nerve repair and cancer and so forth. So endogenous, I talked about these neuropeptides, endogenous opioid peptides. They're involved in a multitude of different things. So when Dr. Muth and Dr. Zielsdorf give their presentations, I start thinking about, well, how can one drug affect a multitude of different things? It's because it's modulating these neuropeptides that are involved in, and they're found all over different cells in the body. So neurotransmitter function is affected. These endorphins promote and regulate growth and repair, improve cellular repair. We'll talk about white blood cells, how they get stimulated and so forth to enhance their benefits. Overall immune stabilization. So I always think of LDN as finding that homeostasis back in the body. So if we have a hyperimmune system and we become autoimmune, LDN can help scale that back. But on the other side, if we have an infection, we have an underacting immune system, we can use LDN to improve that patient's immune system. So it's interesting how you have one drug that can help in a multitude of different ways. And then that overall well-being is enhanced. So looking at LDN enhancing, again, dopamine and that pleasure center and helping with endogenous neuropeptides, LDN is helping to, again, give us that overall sense of well-being. I think of it as just moving our bodies, our biochemistry back into center, into that middle of the line, that homeostasis that we're always trying to shoot for. Not overacting and not underacting. Oh, this slide, having some slide issues, sorry. Opioid peptides and receptors. So not that all of this is terribly important, but endogenous opioid peptides, there's different classes of these in our bodies. Again, I think of these small proteins, these different keys in our body that are signaling and activating or neutralizing different processes in our bodies. So again, I always think of an endorphin, there's enkephalin, L or Lu and enkephalin, and dynorphin. And then you get into these synthetic opioids that are trying to modulate these different receptors. So you've got things like morphine, Demerol, codeine, all these pharmaceuticals that I'm familiar with day to day. Some are used for pain control, some are used to help with sedation, anti-diarrheals. So it all depends on how that drug is chemically structured will influence its pharmacology in the body. So we just got to be aware that there's these different types of receptors in the body, and LDN is helping to modulate these neurotransmitters and these peptides having different outcomes. All right, so we talked about low-dose naltrexone. It's this antagonist, meaning I always think of, a lock and key analogy. So when I think of an agonist drug, it's something that's activating a receptor. It's causing a door to open. Where a partial agonist, you get, again, that drug fits into a key or into a keyhole in a door, and that door might only open halfway. With naltrexone, we get a blocking effect of that opioid receptor. So again, that key or that naltrexone fits into that receptor and it blocks it. It doesn't open the door at all. It keeps the some other activators from doing their work. So we'll look at how naltrexone really starts to work in the body. All right, hang with me. So naltrexone, it's a nonspecific, short-acting opioid receptor antagonist. So again, it's blocking the receptor. It does have binding to all four of the receptor classes I talked about just a moment ago. This is where it gets interesting. So at the 50 milligram dose that's approved by the FDA, we get a long-term blockade of that receptor. But at low doses, and again, less than 6 milligrams, I put a question mark there, could be less than 4, less than 3, depending on that patient. It has about a 6-hour duration where you don't see that effect typically at that 50 milligram dose. So that's important. What happens is it decreases inflammatory cytokines. Just mentioned, sorry about this, I get ahead of my bullet points here. It's approved at a 50 milligram dose. It's actually been used up to 300 milligrams traditionally. Naltrexone itself is, I guess, it's generic. It's relatively inexpensive. And here's a fun fact on naltrexone that I like to talk about is that you can absorb it through the skin. So it has a molecular weight of 377. Not that that number is terribly important, but anything less than 500, you can get it through the skin. So you can actually use naltrexone topically for different dermatitis and skin issues. The opioid receptor, the mu opioid receptor in LDN. So it has a low affinity for encephalin and naltrexone. If the mu receptor is stimulated, what ends up happening is inflammation decreases. LDN acts as, again, this antagonist, resulting in upregulation of production of encephalin. So the way I think of it is naltrexone goes and binds to the opioid receptor, sticks on there for about 6 hours. During that time, the body is thinking, you know, what's going on? I don't see any activity here at this receptor. In the background, I'm going to upregulate my production of encephalin. When LDN finally releases off of that receptor, now we've got this larger pool of endorphins ready to basically do some work, do some action. And so we're just tricking the body's own biochemistry into upregulating some of these endorphins. So that's where I kind of get into, I got to remind myself the health benefits of these endogenous peptides that we're basically kind of tricking into the body to upregulate their production. So again, it's modulating neurotransmitter function. It's changing regulation of growth. It's improving, you know, cellular repair. So we get into uses of LDN for some of these diseases in the traditional world that may be more difficult to treat, MS and different neurological disorders where it seems like the nerves are just shot and beyond repair. I've seen patients in the pharmacy come through the door. I had a patient yesterday getting LDN for the first time that was using it for a nerve disorder that the doctors really didn't even have a diagnosis for. Basically, you know, nerve dysfunction, or nerves are on fire. So I see LDN helping in that process of general cell repair. Immune stabilization, I see that quite often. We have a few doctors here in Wisconsin that are prescribing LDN for chronic Lyme disease. We'll talk about that in one of my patient cases. And then again, just overall well-being, I see naltrexone being prescribed just to help within improving mood, helping with sleep, and just so that overall enhancement of feeling well. So I put on here proposed mechanism of LDN. I think there's still a little bit that we need to figure out, especially with some of these different endorphins that are moving around in the body and the different receptors and receptor locations. But many diseases are expressions of malfunction of the immune system. The immune system is regulated in large by these endorphins, which have a primary action on opioid receptors. So again, blocking this opioid receptor only for a brief time, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours, creates this upregulation of production of endorphins. That in turn, you've got now this army of proteins that are acting as, I call them, immune modulators. Maybe they're enhancing the immune system or just putting it back in, again, homeostasis. If it's overproducing something, it's going to draw it back. If it's underproducing, it's going to pull it forward. And then also helping with cell growth is also mediated by a certain subtype of endorphin. So you can, outside of today's talk, but you can look at things where LDN has this potential for cancers and so forth, where it can be potentially beneficial. So I think there's more still to come in that part of research with LDN. But wait, there's more. All right, so talking about LDN and the opioid receptor, there is also benefit to the, what I call the toll-like receptors. They're involved in the first line defense against microbial invasions, so basically an infection. The toll-like receptors are found in white blood cells, dendritic cells, so all these different subclasses of immune cells in the body, B lymphocytes, mast cells, maybe you've heard of some of these before. So when I started looking at LDN again and its broad range of pharmacology, I start to wonder, well, how could one drug affect so many different diseases? Well, you start looking at some of the research that's out there and you go, aha, look at this. LDN is influencing not only the opioid receptor, but the toll-like receptors. And look at where these receptors are found in many different cells of the body. And so it's, again, modulating this receptor. Toll-like receptors activation leads to pro-inflammatory cytokines. So again, these small proteins. This leads to this activation of white blood cells to kill the intruder, and we get this, again, this microbial or antimicrobial benefit. The problem here, though, is so toll-like receptor activation can lead to NF-kappa-B. Not that name is terribly important, but what I think of this NF-kappa-B is this master switch to inflammation. And if inflammation, don't get me wrong, it's important for the body, but we want it controlled. And when NF-kappa-B gets out of control, that's when we can run into problems. So we can see LDN toning that down and improving the inflammatory response. So I think there's definitely more to come with LDN and toll receptors as well. I did mention earlier that LDN, all things considered, is a very safe drug to take. I just put a list of side effects on here that I want patients to be aware of. And in all honesty, the main side effects I see for patients is difficulty sleeping at night. Typically when that happens, the provider will have that patient move the dose up earlier into the day for a short period of time. And then the other side effect that I do see patients report back to me at the pharmacy is vivid dreams, is very unusual dreams. And again, there's a couple different ways we can handle that. On my notes here, I have switching the taking the dose in the morning. Sometimes we can just lower the dose potentially. So there's, again, a lot of different things we can do to get LDN to work in that patient if they're having problems. But again, in my experience, you know, 90-95% of the time, patients are tolerating this medication very well. I'm not going to go through the rest of the side effects there. You can see them there, read them for yourself. There is one thing I do like to do point out, though. We do have a lot of patients here at the pharmacy that get prescribed LDN for Hashimoto's or for autoimmune hypothyroidism. And so sometimes that LDN starts to work almost too well, I'll say, and that patient's thyroid dose potentially needs to be adjusted. So you're a patient out there with Hashimoto's and you're thinking about taking LDN, that's just one thing you and your provider want to be aware of, is thyroid dosing adjustment might be necessary. So talking more on dosing, again, from that traditional pharmacy standpoint, and especially at MD here, there's a lot of different dosing that I see. So common starting places, what I typically see is 1.5 to 2 milligrams. I'd even maybe go up to 3 milligrams. Titration, I see, again, doctors doing different variations here. Some are going up by 0.5 milligram every 30 days, or sometimes even every 2 weeks. I have some providers that are going up by 2 milligrams. So there's not one set protocol out there. It should be patient specific. Again, like anything else, in my opinion, average dosing that I typically see is 3.5 to 6 milligrams. And again, my patient case, I've got, there are some outliers there that I'll talk about momentarily. And then titration is not always necessary. Some doctors that prescribe LDN to our pharmacy here, they'll start that patient off right at 4.5, 5 milligrams right out of the gate, and that patient will do just fine. So again, we want to be aware that it's not a one size fits all with LDN. A couple of contraindications with low dose naltrexone. So if anyone is on a narcotic pain medication, if we go back to that lock and key analogy, if low dose naltrexone is stuck on that receptor and blocking it, this pain medication is not going to be able to get in there and provide that pain control for that patient. So you have to get that patient off of their pain medication or get it down to a low dose and so forth and manage that patient appropriately. And then there's conflicting opinion on immunosuppressed patients, maybe somebody that has a transplant patient that are on immunosuppressant medications, or maybe they're on prednisone and so forth. Not that it's an absolute contraindication, but it's something that you have to balance the risks and benefits between each patient and their provider and so forth. So that is something to be aware of and to take into consideration. And naltrexone and pregnancy, category C. Again, there's not, you know, that gold standard study or even just information out there that shows that LDN can be used safely in pregnancy. So it's, again, one of those things where the patient's going to have to work with their doctor and seeing if that would be right for them, if it's absolutely necessary or potentially necessary to take. Best time to take, I mentioned this already, is often at bedtime. That endorphin production, that peptide production, is generally greater during the night hours. And so if I can block that receptor during that same period of time, the body is going to, again, upregulate this endorphin production and essentially get a better clinical outcome for the patient. It's not always the case that the patient can take it at bedtime or later in the day, but ideally we try to shoot for that. And starting dose, I mentioned already, again, and I've seen doctors start patients out at 0.5 to 1 milligram, but again, I've even seen up to 3-4 milligrams. So whatever you and the doctor decide is best. And I've just got a couple of patient cases here. I think I went a little bit faster than I anticipated. Sorry for talking so fast. Probably the best, and again, I don't always like to share anecdotal stories, but the best story that I've got is a 12-year-old boy that was coming in here, actually still gets his LDN. He's 16 now. But his father would come in every month to get the LDN refilled. And they were to the point where his Crohn's got so bad, they were going to do a bowel resection. And I kept kind of pleading with the dad to, you know, stick with it. There's, again, the LDN's not hurting anything. And so after 6 months, it was right around that 6 month time period where the dad came in and told me the story where they had the surgery scheduled. His son was going in to one last scan to just see where, you know, the surgeons had to do the resection. And basically his Crohn's was gone. The inflammation, the GI tract was, I wouldn't say perfect, but it was where the dad told me, yep, the bowel resection was canceled. And it, not that the LDN had everything to do with this child turning it around, but the father definitely thought it played a big benefit in helping his son overcome this chronic inflammatory issue. So, but again, it took 6 months for that patient to to see that LDN benefit. So it can take some time. I always tell patients if it's not working, if you don't feel that it's working, to hang with it. If you know, as far as affordability goes and all those things are in line, don't give up on it too soon. So at least give me that. I always say at least give me 3-4 months minimum. And I always share that story about the Crohn's patient. If somebody's on the fence of continuing with low-dose naltrexone. And then on kind of the other side of the scale, I had a doctor that was prescribing, again, low-dose naltrexone for a 65-year-old male with, he didn't want to go through that traditional prostate cancer treatment. He wanted to do different strategies. And so, again, he was doing a multitude of different things, but they contributed a lot of his success of keeping his PSA in range by the addition of low-dose naltrexone. And I followed this patient for a multitude of years, and he started out at that 5 milligram range, but it seemed like about every year to 18 months, he had a bump up a milligram or two. And when I last checked his profile, he was at 9 milligrams. So LDN can take on a few different things and issues in the body for sure. And it's, again, not one dose fits every scenario. And then my last patient case is with Lyme disease. This patient came in just a few months ago. At age 26, she was diagnosed with Lyme disease, seen multiple providers, just really wasn't getting the answers that she was looking for. She started, I don't remember the dose off the top of my head. I could certainly look that up, but started LDN 3 months ago after being on it 4 weeks. So I would certainly consider her an early responder. She finally started seeing her symptoms improved. With her Lyme disease, she was sharing with me that it was the joint aches and pains, the foggy thinking, and the LDN helped to just clean up a lot of those symptoms that were just giving her that poor quality of life. So, all right, I think that is my last, one of my last slides here. So again, that for me, that final take-home point that I want patients to understand is low-dose naltrexone is enhancing our own body's production of endorphins. So it is, it's working with, I always say, our natural chemistry. In my mind, as that traditional pharmacist, a lot of the medications I was trained on seem to overtake our natural body's chemistry, where I think of low-dose naltrexone as really just working more within our body's own physiology, so biochemistry. That's what really intrigues me about using low-dose naltrexone.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
Sorry for rambling on there.
No, that was good. Does anyone have any questions? If you do, there is a Q&A button that you can click on and submit to us your question, and I will help feed those to Dan. So far, I have not received a question. I'll just give you a couple minutes to digest all that Dan shared with us and see if we get any questions. We're definitely ahead of schedule. So if all else fails and we don't have any questions to talk about right now during the session, but if you think of some after the fact, you can email, maybe email me directly, which is Monica, M-O-N-I-C-A, and then R-P-H at mdcustomrx.com. You can also log on to our website at mdcustomrx.com and fill out a form post and communicate to us that way too. We received a question that, what about, can you comment about using LDN for sciatica pain?
Sure. I mean, I could personally speak on that because I have sciatica pain. I haven't used LDN for that issue. I've used some other compounded topical creams for that, but that's a different topic. So I know specifically when you look at, again, just pain in general and sciatica pain or whatever that pain may be, LDN is going in to modulate that opioid receptor and give it that analgesic effect, both in the periphery and in the brain, in the central nervous system. So LDN has that unique ability of, again, blocking that receptor so that the pain signal is not transferred or signaled to the brain, if that makes sense. And then also in the central nervous system, it again is modulating that response so that pain signal isn't as intense. So is it doing anything to calm that nerve down directly? No, but it's at least giving us that pain relief. Hopefully that answers that question. It's a long answer there. And it has that anti-inflammatory effect because again, it's reducing inflammation by upregulating these endorphins that are in turn our body's natural own, our own pain relieving product, peptide. That helps. So yes.
Good answer. Yeah. And we received, how about how long does the patient need to stay on LDN for Hashimoto's, or do they need to be on it forever?
That's a good question. I don't know the exact answer to that for sure, but I could tell you actually another patient case that I probably should have mentioned. Young boy, I don't remember his age. He had been 8, 9, 10 years old. Had a TPO level of 3,000, somewhere in that range, and was put on LDN. And it took 3 months to get his TPO level down. It finally dropped down to, I believe, around 1,000, which actually the mom was ecstatic with that because they were trying for years a multitude of different treatments that weren't working. But yes, that I know that particular patient, he's still on LDN currently to keep his antibodies in check.
Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, LINDA, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.